this is Daryl, and I'm here with
Anthony Ha.
Hello, Anthony. How's it going?
It's good. I'm excited to be here for another episode of Original Content.
That's right. That's what this is. It's not just a regular conversation. It's a podcast.
Nope. I mean, sometimes it's hard to tell.
Yes.
But yes, we are here to talk about the week's streaming news and what we've been watching, and then do an in-depth review of the new Netflix series, Big Mouth.
Yeah, that's right. So news-wise, it wasn't a crazy week for news. There were some other things that I think drew attention. Google had their big hardware event, so that took a lot of the steam out of the news cycle. But there was a few things. So what do we have to talk about?
So we've got some new Amazon science fiction shows. I mean, it sounds like they're very, very early, right? Like, that's not necessarily, you know, when we talk about these kinds of deals, it's like they're developing the shows. A lot of different things could happen, but they're working on shows based on Ringworld, Lazarus, and Snow Crash.
Yes.
Of which I know Ringworld and Snow Crash. I don't know anything about Lazarus.
Me also.
Oh, wait, Lazarus... Lazarus is a comic book series by Greg Rucka, who I love.
It is that, but I didn't know about it before I heard it.
Yes, but if you are a science fiction fan, there's a very good chance that you've heard of Snow Crash. I mean, anyone in Silicon Valley has probably heard of Snow Crash because I think there's
They've modeled their lives after it.
For better and for worse. it's basically, I think, considered the kind of definitive, or at least the early... one of the best early depictions of this, of virtual reality. And I mean, presumably that's part of why Neal Stephenson, the author, I mean, he's become this sort of like tech guru and is now...
Yeah, we had him at Disrupt. Two Disrupts ago, was it?
It was a year ago.
Yeah,
in San Francisco.
Yeah, so he's now a soothsayer. He can tell us where things are going. He can give us insight into the head of Mark Zuckerberg. Actually, no one can do that.
But it's also one of those interesting things because Snow Crash came out in the early 90s, so it's essentially been about 25 years since it's, I mean, a little less. Essentially, by the time the show comes out, if it comes out, it'll have been 25 years or more since the book came out. And this is one of those kind of near future things where I could imagine that a lot of what's in it is pretty dated at this point.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to have to update a lot of it, I guess, is my point.
Yeah.
It'll just feel very contemporary.
I mean, you saw Blade Runner 2049. Don't tell
me
anything about it. But because I'm seeing it tonight, which will be yesterday in podcast time. I rewatched the final cut of the original Blade Runner yesterday, 2 days ago in podcast time. I'm not going to keep doing that.
That's just going to be the running theme, is that we cannot get over the fact that this podcast is posted a day after we record it.
We'll,
I mean, partly because,
ever.
You know, at TechCrunch, we're so used to like, well, once it's done, just hit publish. What are you waiting for? What are you doing?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Versus
like when I was in a newspaper, it was definitely this thing you had to wrap your head around, where you had to write like today, even if it was actually tomorrow, because
You not even allowed? I thought you had to write like Thursday always or whatever, so that you were always...
No, today was the one exception. You could say today, but if it was tomorrow, to avoid any ambiguity, you would say the specific day.
Wow, newspapers.
Yeah, they're dead now. But anyway, Snow Crash, that'll be interesting. I mean, and it's interesting because I think also for a long, I think a lot of times people talk about Snow Crash kind of in the same sentence as Neuromancer.
Yeah.
Which actually, I mean, is a book that I think Snow Crash is good. I think Neuromancer is like one of my favorite books probably. And that's another one where
read Snow Crash, but not Neuromancer.
Yeah, you did that the wrong way around. But Neuromancer is another book that just, it keeps, because I think for this like generation of both readers and then also just, you know, technologists, they're like just really important books, and people keep kind of saying this should be on screens, whether I guess at first, you know, this should be on movie screens, oh, maybe this should be on TV screens, but I think they keep running into this problem that how do you actually make that in, you know, 2017 or whatever year and have it still feel relevant.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring that up, because I think like Snow Crash was produced already. I remember when I was researching this, right? Wasn't it like a mini series or a TV movie or something?
I don't think any of that's true, but I'm going to look that up while we keep talking.
Or it was it was, I think it was maybe not actually produced, but it was optioned for production by Sci-Fi, like alongside some other projects.
Yeah, that might be true.
It never became real thing.
Right. And I think that's essentially what's happened with Neuromancer too, is you keep getting these announcements that it's they've been optioned and different people are trying. This is interesting. Apparently for a while, Joe Cornish, the guy who directed Attack the Block, was working on it.
Okay.
But yeah, presumably that's no longer happening now that Amazon is working on it instead.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, I mean, I hope it just doesn't like stall out again. But Amazon, I feel like, is probably a better home for it because it's like, I don't know. I just feel like you don't hear that much about Amazon. Maybe we just don't hear about it because we don't follow up, but you don't seem to hear that much about Amazon like optioning things and then doing nothing with it. Like at the very least, they seem to produce.
Right. And I think they're sort of like hungry for content. You know, when something, you're getting something like Amazon off the ground, I think you're just hungry for content in a way that I think a studio maybe is not. And so I think it's less likely that something would just sort of sit in development hell the way it might with like a regular Hollywood studio. That's just a guess. I mean, who knows? It's definitely, you know, these things, especially this is probably going to be a pretty big budget thing. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. They all could be very big budget things, right?
Yeah.
And Lazarus does look good based on what I looked up about it. Cause it's another thing that's like a near future sort of. They all kind of have, actually, wait, what's Ringworld's setting?
Ringworld is far future.
Far future. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that one might be the most ambitious, actually.
Right.
Yeah, they'd all be very ambitious projects. But yeah. The Lazarus one, yeah, it sounds like kind of maybe the best mix between some of the things that have been tried before. With like, it sounds kind of like, what was the, like Marco Polo, but with space or future.
Marco Polo with space.
Like the Netflix Marco Polo, not like
real
Marco Polo.
I see. Okay, I thought you meant there was a show that was Marco Polo with space. I was like, what? That sounds great.
No.
Yeah.
So that I think that could be a good one for them. I think, it's like the goal here is that classic the theme of like Bezos looking for this giant massive hit, right? That's like steeped in sort of a fantasy epic vibe. So
yeah,
if they produce them all, and if they keep throwing series at these to try to get that for Bezos, I mean, we all win. That'd be great, right? If we just got attempt after attempt, as long as they, but then again, then it might be bad if they just like try it and then one season, and then even if it's like somewhat successful, it's like not successful enough for Bezos, so he just keeps killing them. That would be very
sad. I mean, that's, I think, part of the challenge is like, you know, I mean, Netflix in general, I think, has become a little pickier about like what it's renewing. But I think some of the recent cancellations are also some of its more expensive shows where they kind of said, well, this is like doing okay, but like for the amount of money we're spending on this, we need it to do more than okay. So these are probably, again, I could imagine maybe a version of Snow Crash that like isn't crazy elaborate. I think Ringworld, which again is like this, basically this like space opera, you would need to spend a ton of money on that. So, you know, these feel like shows where like you do like a season or two, and if it's not like a home run, they would probably be like, see you later.
Yeah. Yeah. Even far less ambitious projects, but ones that are still kind of like challenging. I mean, Game of Thrones has all the money, all the interest, and they still are like, oh, we got to take more time with this. So yeah, you can, if they tried to build something like this and they were like, it's not working out, I think they would kill it pretty quick.
Yeah.
It could be very, very bad for fans, because it could be like, and then if it does get killed, like Snow Crash or whatever, it probably reduces the likelihood that it gets picked up again for another interpretation for at least a while, right?
So, yeah, you would think so. Although it seems like we're like now in this period where there's so much obsession with just developing existing IP that even if it was like turned into a failed TV show, that might in some, for the next like movie studio, might validate it in a way and be like, all right, sure, let's try it again. I mean, say like some people might like the show and we'll do the movie. And
that's true.
Imitation of a Hollywood executive. I don't
that
really
is what
know
they sound like.
Yeah. I don't even know what was going on there.
but it's like how there are so many Punisher movies that you don't know what to do with them. But they're actually, they've been spaced out pretty well. But then what about stuff like the Hulk? Like, it makes me so mad that they won't even touch the Hulk again. The Hulk is like, it's like salt of the earth. Like, you cannot go there. Nothing will grow in the territory.
Which is funny because neither of the two movies was like an out and out failure. I think they were just both kind of, you know, didn't do quite, they spent a lot of money on them and they didn't do quite as well as they wanted. But like,
yeah, but I actually watched and enjoyed both in my own way.
Yeah. Own way.
That's, I think
part of
gross,
it is also because like that first Hulk movie was like still made before, you know, Marvel had been acquired by Disney, and it was distributed, I think, by Universal. I think it's the only like Marvel Cinematic Universe film distributed by Universal. And so it's like, there's some stuff that's just like corporate shenanigans going on there too.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, it's funny actually. I mean, I really liked the first one, a lot. I thought
the Ang Lee one.
Bana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was really good.
He was great. Yeah. And then he didn't really like, he's had some stuff since then. That's not fair. Including, what's it called? Troy? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, he was in Troy. That was also more than 10 years ago, but sure.
Yeah, that was a good movie. Anyways.
All right.
Not really going anywhere.
All right, let's move on to our next piece of news then, which is Roku unveiling faster media players and a new operating system.
Yeah, so they did, and they followed right on the heels of Amazon, like unveiling their latest Fire TV. I mean, the timing was so close that they must have been. Part of it is just the holiday season, because we also saw. Sonos. Sonos just released like new speakers on the very same day that Google had their crazy hardware event, which was bad for Sonos, but I'm sure they had no idea. And the other thing about it was like, it's like an Alexa or whatever. It's like an Echo, except it's $100 more expensive. But it's got Sonos sound. So that was also weird. Like, everything about it was weird. But everybody's bunched up because it's holiday season. They want to get your holiday dollars. It's the only time anyone spends money anymore, apparently. and so everybody's just throwing everything they can at the wall, including these new Roku players. Not that they aren't good-looking little devices, but like they all iterate in smart ways on whatever Roku was offering before. Mostly, I think the biggest thing they've done really is drop the price of the top one. And that I swear that could have been like a game day decision of like, oh, Fire TV is so cheap, like we got to do this. So their top end one was $130 last year.
Right.
And it's now $100 to start. So
right.
That's for your, it's got 60 frames per second, HDR, 4K, all the things, expandable micro SD memory, which is not something that a lot of these players have. So that's kind of nice. And then they have this new operating system 8.0, which I think is going to roll out to Roku enabled TVs too, or at least some of them. And it has a lot of like additional features to tie into traditional terrestrial TV, and lets you turn on your TV using voice commands. So it'll actually like power on the TV that the Roku is connected to. And you can use single sign-on if you have like a cable or a satellite provider. There's 30 providers supported, and then you get like all your stuff in there, including a smart guide that like combines streaming sources and TV sources and all that stuff. So it's like, you know, they're bridging the gap. They're saying, we don't care if you're, maybe you were a cord cutter, a cord never before. Now we want just to be the TV OS for everybody, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess it also just feels like whenever you have these sort of like price cuts, it just, not that everything has to be about Apple, but there's a component where you're just like, man, like, yeah, everyone is just so much cheaper than the Apple TV.
Yeah, that is. And it's, I mean, that's the thing, because Apple was like, I think there was a lot of like, oh, like finally, like Apple's achieving parity, but they're not achieving parity. Like, they're still lagging so far behind because it took them so long to bring 4K to market. And then everybody else has been doing it for long enough that they're like they, everybody knew this was coming.
Right.
And because of the way that Apple executed it, like everybody else was able to say, well, let's get our costs or our BOM down to the point where we can sell devices at like way, way under, with still acceptable margins for us, right? And then Apple's looking like I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You look at it and you're like, $180 or whatever, and what do I get that justifies that extra 50% markup or 100% markup or whatever? So I don't know. What do you get? Apps. But nobody cares about apps. We talked about that a lot.
Right. Like, right. I mean, the only apps you care about are streaming apps, which you get with any streaming device, presumably.
Yeah, those are no longer like they're completely commoditized. Like, there's nothing exclusive or unique about any of them at this point, except for maybe Amazon. Like, actually, that's a good question. I don't know if Amazon Prime Video is available on Roku, and I kind of want to say it isn't, but
oh,
I won't.
Huh. Let's see if we can look that up while we're talking.
It probably is.
Yeah,
I have a briefing tomorrow, like Roku, to find out. So
I feel like Roku has like everything, pretty much everything, right?
Yeah, I think it does, and I.
Yeah, yeah, it's on. Amazon Video has an app for Roku.
There you go. So that was the only thing that I could think, like, is maybe, you know, because artificially, like, Amazon has been holding it from some devices, but it's coming to everything now. It's supposedly coming to Apple TV at some point, although I think there was some news maybe last week about, and then this actually came out around, so we talked last week about how Apple TV was back on Amazon.
Right.
But now I've heard that that is not the case necessarily. So it got pulled, right?
It was just like a little like glitch, basically, or an accident.
Yeah, but it wasn't an accident, is what I hear.
Oh, okay.
I hear that it was like, and this is secondhand, so that's why it's not on TechCrunch.com. But I hear that it's like, basically, they had an agreement, but they now disagree about sort of how this should work. So Amazon pulled that pretty quickly.
Oh.
As a negotiating tactic for something else going on with the app. So who knows, but it's not, I mean, it's going to be a while yet before we see it on there. Hopefully it'll get there soon.
Cool.
Yeah. So anything else you think about Roku? Or is it?
I mean, we should mention probably that it also went public last week. So it's kind of.
Yeah, but I don't know what that means.
You know, I mean, I guess it just.
Tune into Equity to find out what that means.
Sure. And I mean, that's actually been the topic of several episodes of Equity. But I do think, I mean, we're at this interesting point where I think a lot of the sort of companies that have come up in some way tied to like these sort of this wave of streaming. Some of them hardware companies like Roku, some of them, you know, more content / software companies like Spotify, but that there's this moment where I think a lot of people are starting to go public and there's more, I think more scrutiny on kind of the business models now, where
yeah.
I think for a while it's just kind of like, yeah, like just get as many users as you can, raise money and like spend money, like, you know, just to get users and get content. And now I think you're going to see these companies kind of enter different stages,
Well, that could explain a lot of the TV integration stuff, right? It's kind of like a going legit thing.
Right.
Versus
yeah.
being like a Plex box where you're like basically signaling, hey, we're pirate friends. But
right, right. And I mean,
not
I think,
that Plex encourages piracy.
Yeah.
But it just happens to be used for it sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, I should say Roku, I think, doesn't quite, I mean, is not like, I don't think Roku was ever a company that didn't care about making money and was just kind of like, yeah, whatever. We just want to get as many boxes out there as we can. But I think, you know, that you know, the business will change as a result of that. How? Listen to Equity to find out.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'd listen to them to figure out what are their pressures from shareholders, because I don't know. Making money. I guess that's the main
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, right? That's usually what they're looking for.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Got it. Yeah. I'm hopefully going to check them out. So maybe I'll share thoughts in future about what it's actually like to use one. I'm a Roku novice. I've not used Roku maybe for like a couple seconds or something, but not like as a device that I use regularly. So.
Yeah.
Kind of excited to check that out, actually.
Cool. Well, I guess the one last piece of news that we wanted to talk about was Jeffrey Katzenberg, who is a longtime Hollywood executive. One of the things that I put into my story, even though I know no one else cares, is one of the first movies he worked on when he was at Paramount was Star Trek, the motion picture. Not, you know, I don't think he was very, I think fairly junior at that time, and he doesn't have to take the blame for that movie. then he, you know, was basically...
What was he? Like, he was like a best boy grip or something?
No, he was like a producer. I don't know exactly what it is. He was an executive at Paramount.
Okay.
But he was like a junior... But like, I think like definitely, I vaguely remember like seeing like some behind the scenes documentaries where he was... Because Star Trek the Motion Picture very famously had this very drawn out production where like everything was... All the special effects were getting finished at the last minute. And I think he was like kind of involved in just trying to get everything done on time. But that's not what he's known for. He's known for being at Disney, basically running the movie division, Disney's movie division, when Disney Animation kind of had its renaissance in the late 80s and early 90s with The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast.
So he put all the boners in the animation.
That's right. He's the boner guy. And then he started DreamWorks and then DreamWorks Animation. And basically was running DreamWorks Animation until last year when it was acquired by NBC Universal. So that's all the setup. So now he's doing this new media venture where he's trying to raise $2 billion for streaming video content. And this news was broken in the New York Times. And the way they described what he's trying to do is essentially to like create like game, like they said, basically imagine Game of Thrones. Everyone wants to like have their own Game of Thrones, of course. Imagine Game of Thrones, but like if it was like done in like 10-minute chunks.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Right. Well, I think the Game of Thrones is a bad example because like it also has this like has so many cast members and sometimes the story, not now, but in the past, the story has moved so slowly that like
yeah,
if you watch
that's what
it
I was thinking.
10 minutes at a time, like you would just be like one character having one conversation for 10 minutes. So
half a conversation and right. It would be so boring. It would be about like procedural like matters of state or something, and you'd be like, well, never again.
So that's like clearly that comparison was written by somebody who has never seen Game of Thrones, has like maybe like seen the ratings for Game of Thrones and seen some commercials, but but basically the idea is to do that kind of, you know, high quality, high budget, I think mostly scripted television, but do it like for short form and do it, you know, really designed for smartphones.
For the millennial attention span.
Yes. I mean, that's the weird... I don't understand why it needs... Like, I think people are perfectly happy to watch 30 or 60-minute episodes of TV, so that's strange to fixate on the tech. And maybe, you know, maybe that won't be part of it. I mean, I do think that, like, definitely creating it to be watched on a smartphone or on a tablet, I mean, especially on a smartphone, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know that the 10-minute viewing time really is that important.
Does it have anything to do with like it being easy to monetize that way? Like, is this but the plan isn't to do some kind of ad supported service?
No. Okay. I think it's all indications are that it's going to be a subscription service. I mean, I think he sees it as something that's like taking on Netflix and things like that. But I don't think he said explicitly what the business model is going to be.
Well, I think there's some merit there in every time that I use public transit, which is rarely because I don't leave my house that often. But when I do leave my house, that's usually what I do, is like you see people on their devices, right?
Right.
And for very short little trips. So
that's,
you could manage to like work your way into a lot of people's lives that way. And it'd probably be nicer to have a contained piece of content rather than like, you know, right, watching one episode of BoJack over the course of like five commutes or something. Right.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think part of it is probably just like if you say sort of in general people are interested in shorter content on mobile screens, let's just, you know, build stuff that's designed specifically for that. I mean, it makes sense. I don't know that, like 10 minutes is like a magic number. And maybe that's just the quote, you know, that he was saying 10 minutes, but it could be 5 minutes. It could be 20 minutes. It just, you know, might depend on the show or the results they get. And then, of course, the other thing is just the thing that really got a lot of people's attention was the $2 billion. which is a lot of money. And we've been talking about some other, you know, giant tech companies that are also looking to spend, you know, $1 or $2 billion in content in like the next year. So like again, I don't think the $2 billion is necessarily going to be spent in the next year.
Or even, and he has to build an actual company as well as acquire the content.
Right? And he's not necessarily going to, I mean, you know, if he gets $1.5 billion or $1 billion, he might still, you know, it might still happen.
Oh, you mean it's not an all or nothing campaign like on Kickstarter?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's how this kind of fundraising works. So like all of that, you know, TBD, but it does suggest that, so it's not like an apples to apples thing where he'll be definitely spending $2 billion on content in the next year, but it suggests that he's got some pretty ambitious plans for it.
Yeah, he's serious. And I mean, it did say that he's talking to Apple and Disney and Google, right?
Yeah, basically any big media company, which I think, you know, it's essentially, it doesn't really say how serious those meetings are. You kind of also think that if you're...
He probably can get those meetings.
Yeah, he can get a meeting with anyone. It's just a question of can he get, you know, a $100 million check from them or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So interesting quote, the end quote there.
Yeah.
The content is the kingmaker. It's not the king.
Right.
The king is the platform. So, I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I think he's getting at something. I mean, like all these things, I think they're generalizations, but essentially what he's saying is that to a certain extent, it doesn't necessarily matter that you need, especially at the beginning when you're getting something off the ground, you need like good content that gets people to sign up. But then I think at a certain point, if you just are, so he says like basically like the platform is the real king. And so that if you're Netflix, if you're HBO, if you're Spotify, you're the king. And that, you know, is sort of almost, that's a fact that exists somewhat separately of the content that you have. And that so once people are involved, I mean, I don't think you can completely separate those things, but there's a certain point where like you might say, well, there's this other show that I like that like has gone, you know, to some other place, but that doesn't mean I'm going to cancel my Netflix subscription. I'm not even necessarily going to think about it in this sort of, you know, cost benefit analysis of like, well, like what's the exact Netflix library? I'm just going to be like, I always have a Netflix subscription. Why would I not have that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. They've gotten to a point where you're not really going to throw them over just for... because there's better content somewhere else, right? Like it's like the net value of Netflix as a platform outweighs any individual pieces of content.
Right, exactly.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm interested to see what he does. I'm glad in a way that it's 10 minutes and not like the 30 seconds. Like, I mean, there was a bit of that, especially when, you know, video was new on like Instagram and stuff. There are people being like, oh, this is great. I'm going to make content for this, like scripted content or like series or whatever. And that's stupid. And it was a stupid idea and always will be. So.
Right. Oh, I should actually, I think there is one other piece of news that we should discuss, which kind of broke as we were getting ready for the show, which is that Netflix prices are going up.
Yes, they are. They already went up for us. I'm hoping it's not going to go up for us being Canadians.
That's why it didn't seem as big a deal to you. But
yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Join the club, I think America.
It's funny because I think for any other company, it would not seem like that big a deal. But if for some reason, Netflix has done such a good job of just like having this really insanely low price and just like locking it in for a long period of time that any price change just seems kind of crazy. Like seems like, the ground is shaking.
Yeah, for sure. And especially, I think there's like a sense of fear that it's now regular and sort of inevitable.
Right.
And because when was the last time they had one? Was it like around a year ago? I just feel like I remember this exact same hubbub.
Yeah, I think recently. It wasn't quite a year ago. Let me look that up. I mean, because it's also hard to remember because I think there's usually anytime there's a Netflix price change, there's like a whole fuss about is there going to be a Netflix price change before that. And so I'm trying to see October 2015, so yeah, about 2 years ago.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I think and if you look at like their planned spend, right, and if you tie it right to that, like that grows every year, so it just seems like it's now going to be an inevitability. And if it outpaces what people perceive as fair, I wonder what's going to happen. Like, is there a breaking point, do you think? Or do you think they can keep doing this? Because, I mean, And I don't want to tell Netflix this, basically, but I'd probably be willing to pay at least $4 or $5 extra a month, like even now, yeah, to continue getting what I'm getting.
Right. And I think, I mean, part of it is also because Netflix is now in so many homes in the US that I feel like there's not that many more subscribers they can get. So if they're going to grow their US revenue, it has to be through price increases.
Yeah.
I will say, I mean, one of the things is, so like there's three tiers. There's the 4K tier, there's the high def, and then there's just standard definition. And then also the standard definition is limited to one screen. So I would imagine most people are going to get are getting, you know, the high def two devices. And that's still under $10 a month. So I think, like, I can imagine that, like, psychologically getting the sort of, you know, quote unquote standard plan over $10 a month, that would be a tough one. I mean, I think it's going to happen eventually just because that's how pricing and inflation works. But yeah. I think they're going to, I would guess that they're going to resist having that happen for a while. That I don't think it'll be in the next 2 years, if I were to guess. But I'm not a pricing expert. But
right. But you mentioned a good point with like the tiering. Like they could continue to tier out too if they needed to. Like there's more they could do to like offer down market options and then offer sort of up market options too.
Yeah.
They could go either way.
Yeah, I guess maybe even more that, yeah, I don't know if it'll go up, but I think probably they'll always want to have a plan that's below $10 a month. That seems like that just seems obvious to me.
Yeah, agree. Cool. Well, yeah, is that about it for news?
Or yeah, that's it.
Oh, wait. One more.
Oh.
I just wanted to talk about, because I just saw this and I forgot to mention it, but I think it's worth mentioning. The Disney's Disney Now app.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sarah covered it. It has, like, it bundles live TV, on-demand TV, and, like, content from, like, Disney Channel, Disney XD. It has games. It has music, all aimed at the 2 to 14-year-old. Segment. So
people who are literally less than half of our age.
Yes, exactly. But it seems like, I mean, Sarah seemed pretty excited about this, and I think a lot of parents did based on what I saw on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm not a parent and probably never will be, but like, yeah, it just seems like this is a smart thing for Disney to do now. And maybe a kind of a preview of what's to come for Disney's like larger streaming ambitions. So
yeah, I mean, I think in some ways the response to this was a little bit muted just because there's been so much publicity about the fact that Disney is going to do a much bigger push into streaming in, I think, 2019 was this year, right? And so,
and this isn't the subscription-based thing yet. This is actually free and ties in with like either your existing TV packages or whatever. I think you can use single sign-on or whatever.
Right.
And you can, and it's also ad supported. So, but yeah, I mean, just interesting in terms of, even if you're not in the child way or have childs, that'd be cool. If they bundle stuff like this, like you can see how they can make a pretty compelling service, right? If they're like, guess what? It's not just this, like it's live TV. It's on demand TV. It's everything. It's like everything that we make and that falls within this sphere, you can get access to in here. They could just put the Star Wars soundtracks in there. I'd sign up for that.
You can listen to the Star Wars soundtracks on Spotify, dude.
No, I know I have them in many many places already.
and they've got the, you know, the little what do you call it, the little lightsaber at the bottom that shows you how far you are into the song. It's great.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyways, I just thought that was neat
and
a smart way to package their content. So they're thinking. I think they're just like. Like they're a giant, right? It's going to take them a while to move on that stuff, but when they do, get ready for it to have a huge impact in terms of overall media picture.
Totally.
Okay, that's it. Now we're done the news, right?
Done with the news. So let's let's talk about what we've been watching. Daryl, what have you been watching?
So I watched the show that we're going to watch.
That, yes.
Yeah.
We don't need to talk about that yet.
No. What else did I watch? I watched the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery. We talked a bit about that briefly, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I liked
it
more than the first two, and you did not like it more than the first two.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I would say that I thought it was, I think like some people are kind of throwing the first two under the bus in this way where I'm like, I think the first two were good too. But
I didn't think they were bad. I don't mean to say that. Yeah.
Cause I saw a lot of people who were like, this should have been the first episode. And I don't agree with that. I mean, I could imagine that that would work as well, but I thought that the first two episodes that we got were also pretty good. But yeah, this is a lot more fun. I think that I'm definitely on board with. Just like, it's just like, yeah, like it's like the first two are the very serious, you know, like trying to be like tense, like kind of like space thrillers. And this is much more, hey, let's like have an adventure on a spaceship. And so it's nice to see the tone, even though there's still some serious stuff in there. Some like there's a really like scary monster. Well, kind of scary monster in it, and yeah, stuff like that. I mean, certainly by Star Trek standards, it is a very good monster because most Star Trek monsters are really bad. So like I think like it was a solid episode. And I think for a lot of people who maybe weren't totally on board yet, it kind of like got them excited. And I think and it does it probably like. So it's the first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery are sort of this like almost like this prologue that take place on this other ship, the Shenzhou, and then this is the first episode that actually takes place on Discovery. So it may possibly be sort of closer to what the rest of the show is going to be like.
Yeah, yeah, and that monster. That's funny that you said it's like it is better, it's better than most Star Trek monsters, Star Trek TV monsters especially. But it's also like, well, it just as you were saying that, it reminded me of kind of the. The Star Wars monsters from episode the you know the one that was in theaters most recently
Rogue One
no
Force like, Awakens
yeah
episode Force 7
Awakens. Yeah, so those robot or no those monsters. Oh, my dog's barking. It's going to be in the podcast. It's fine. The ones with the Han Solo and like when
yeah
they
the tentacle monsters yeah
so those it was better than those monsters.
Yeah, sure. I thought it was more I'm sure that the budget for the Force Awakens monsters was essentially infinite, but they weren't that interesting. This monster is not like an amazing special effect, but like it's cool looking and scary looking.
And and contextually interesting too.
Yeah. And there's
without giving any spoilers.
Yeah, and there's like a bunch of other scary stuff that happens before you see the monster, so that's fun.
Yeah. I also like the new captain. I forget where I've seen that guy. Many things, I think.
Yeah, so it's Jason Isaacs. He's been in He was in the OA recently.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in a similar role where he's sort of like superficially charming, but you kind of think that there's something like not on the level going on with him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's very good at it.
Yeah, and then he's also probably most people have seen him just because he was in the Harry Potter movies as Lucius Malfoy.
Yeah. I was going to say one of the bad wizards, but that's more specific.
Yeah. He had a long, flowing, blonde wig.
Oh, that's right. That's why it took me a while. He's so beautiful in those, so it's hard to say. Yeah, so I watched that. I don't know. You watched that too,
I did.
Obviously.
I watched Blade Runner, as we discussed, which is will be out essentially as people listen to this. So I don't want to spoil anything. Daryl, are there any questions that you want to ask me about Blade Runner?
Only ones that would probably lead to spoilers. I think, this one's not plot related at all, but like, how are the visuals?
It's gorgeous. It's really, really beautiful. I think, I don't think this is a spoiler, is basically Blade Runner is like most famous for this, you know, incredibly detailed depiction of Los Angeles. And it's sort of like, in some ways, like kind of the definitive kind of like seedy, futuristic, cyberpunky science fictional city. In the new one, the city is basically the same, but then it goes out much further. So like the first scene like takes place like on a farm, and like you to see, and there's like, so you see a lot more of like the wider world, and it is really, really beautiful.
Nice. Yeah. I just rewatched the original so that I would be ready for this, and the final cut, of course, because it's the only one Mr. Scott approves of.
I think I actually, so this is going to get really nerd. Like, yes. I had a film, a teacher, in college who actually wrote a book, a little, like a sort of slim book about Blade Runner, for the BFI film series. And he, I know it feels very strongly that there's one change in the final cut that he does not like at all, which is that there's a scene where Roy Beatty, the lead replicant, is like meets his maker, and in the first two cuts he says like, "I want more life, fucker," and then in the final cut it becomes, "I want more life, father," and for that reason he does not fully endorse the final cut because it's
that's a significant difference. So I don't blame him for taking issue with that change.
Yeah, and I feel like fucker is better because you're like, no, I get it. This guy is a father figure. You don't need to say it. It's fine. Like, say fucker. It's better.
Yeah. Okay. But well, yeah. Good to know.
But yeah, so anyone cares
just
about
mentally delete that from my watching of this final cut.
Yeah, anyone who wants to know more about Blade Runner, go read Blade Runner by Scott Bukatman.
Is that just what it's called?
Yeah, it's just called Blade Runner. It's like the BFI Film Classics series.
Okay.
There you go.
You get a kickback for that?
And then he retroactively edits my transcript.
So you did graduate now, right? Your LinkedIn is accurate. cool. Yeah. So I think, I mean, it got me really excited. I the last time I'd seen it was quite a while ago. So it was actually really nice to come to it. I was fairly fresh coming to it again. And same with Tara, who I watched it with, my girlfriend. But yeah, it was cool. It looks, I mean, and yeah, it made me super excited to see what they do with that. Cause they did such a good job. Not even like, they didn't even just do such a good job with what they had. Like, they just did a good job. Like, it's very good looking, even now. I mean, yeah. Sure, there are some parts, but overall, I think it still actually looks quite stunning.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The soundtrack by Vangelis. Tell me that. Is it the soundtrack by Vangelis?
No, they... Oh. I think it's... I actually... That's one of those guys who I don't know if I've ever seen said the word out loud, so I don't know. Because I always... In my head, it was always Vangelis.
Oh, shit. But I don't know. The emphasis.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
yeah. Vangelis. Mark Miller. That was a throwback to our first episode for people who, yeah, haven't been listening the whole time. I would say, so it's two different people who wrote the score. One of them is Hans Zimmer, who like is, you know, yeah, really famous. Well known for the, like, you know, the, who actually I think has done some really great scores, but sometimes can be sort of parodied, is the guy who does like the Inception, like wah. And yeah. That is a
lot. Are there some whahs?
There's a lot. It is, I have to say, like I saw this at a screening, this like Dolby screening room in New York City. Yeah. And it was the loudest experience I've ever had in a movie, Like it was unbearably loud. And I talked to someone else who's been to screenings there. And apparently a lot of it has to do with the screening room, but it is a movie that where like, there's a lot of like, even there's not that much dialogue in the movie, but like anytime there's just a lot of this sort of like rumbling deep music. And so like when you're, that's blasting out of like the speakers, like for the full 2.5 hours of the movie, like it kind of gets to you.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that because it's probably going to get to me. I'm seeing it in the top end sort of local IMAX theater here in Toronto. So I'm sure it'll be basing me like crazy or whatever. Basing me crazy. That's a classic expression people say.
It's sort of an American thing, but it made its way to Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. That makes me super excited. Don't say anything else.
All right. That's it.
There's a review on TechCrunch.
There is a review on TechCrunch. We'll link it,
yeah, in the post and also in the show notes. So you can check that out. And is it spoiler free, that review?
It is, yeah. I mean, I think it has slightly more detail than I revealed here, but you can go into it. And partly because, I mean, it's interesting because like the PR folks at Warner Brothers were definitely, do not share spoilers. And so I mean, I'm generally somebody when I review stuff, I've gotten better about it on this podcast, but like I generally like don't talk about plot at all. And so like in some ways that was just an excuse for me to like revert to my normal mode of like not talking about the plot at all. So like you could read that review and know essentially nothing. You would know essentially nothing about the plot of Blade Runner 2049.
Great. All right. So yeah, please go read it, even if you haven't seen it yet. Also, so I guess then I just one last thing that I was watching, which again is not like actually streaming exclusive, but I was watching it streaming through my Bell Fibe app. It was The Orville. Have you watched any of that yet?
No, I haven't. I've heard such negative things about it.
I know. I had heard such negative things too. I watched all of it though that was available.
How many episodes is that? Like three?
Four
episodes. Okay.
I thought I kind of liked it, which I felt bad about because I'd heard such horrible things about it. But I didn't realize it was going to be like, and I don't like Seth MacFarlane. I don't even like Family Guy, but I didn't realize it was going to be like, it's not like a big spoof thing. It's like kind of like basically Star Trek, but a slightly goofier version of it. But it's not over the top. Like they don't go like, oh, wacky jokes all the time, blah, blah, blah. It's like, and it's not even Galaxy Quest level spoof. It's like still closer to faithful Star Trek representation rather than, even like Galaxy Quest satire, which is weird. But I think it's not good at all.
Okay. It's just not terrible either.
It felt very much to me like watching reruns of TNG on Netflix, except, you know, it's like a slightly off-brand version of that, like the Muzak version of that.
Right.
But
yeah, I guess it just seems like, if you wanted to watch Next Generation, there are still more than 100 episodes of Next Generation on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also, if you want to watch new Star Trek, that is now a thing that also is happening.
Yeah, and you don't have to deal with Seth MacFarlane if you do that. Because he's in it, and that's the worst part, right?
Yeah, it's this weird thing that he's been doing now where he, like, casts himself in the lead. And I don't actually hate him as much as some other people do. it just seems sort of like...
He's not James Corden.
That was another callback for new listeners. He just seems... Yeah, I just don't think he's so great that he needs to, like, give himself... Like in Ted, which I thought was, like, a good, not great movie, where he plays like the teddy bear, and so he has like this fun, funny role, but isn't necessarily the main guy. That's cool. Like that seems like it's weird to me that in most of his other movies since then, he just like casts him, and most of his other work, he just like makes himself like the main actor.
Yeah. I think it's like it's kind of like a Ricky Gervais syndrome, except Ricky Gervais is better and funnier, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, because, yeah, Ricky Gervais often casts himself as, like, the asshole. As, like, the fat asshole.
Yeah, but the lead fat asshole.
Right, sure.
And in this one, too, he's, like, not very sympathetic, but maybe he thinks he is sympathetic.
Right.
It's hard to tell.
Hard to tell.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm probably going to continue watching it because it's, like, yeah, I don't know. It feels, it's almost like, remember the Twitter account? What was it? The Next Generation season whatever? You know what I'm talking about.
Season 8?
Yeah, the fake one. That was like just making up tweet-sized premises for episodes.
I vaguely remember this. I don't know if I ever actually followed it.
Oh, it was funny. And this feels like that, except not as funny, just like mindless, like, oh yeah, okay, it's just more of it. And I could almost just forget who these characters are and substitute in the real cast of TNG, and the plot would make just as much sense.
That sounds like a good way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Is that everything we watched? Did you watch anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right. So let's move on to the review portion of the show.
Cool. So we are reviewing Big Mouth. And again, we'll have a brief spoiler-free section, and then we'll move into spoilers. Actually, I think we could probably do most of the discussion spoiler-free because it's not really a show that you need to spoil that much. But
yeah, that's true. It's like there's no huge plot to
right.
it, right?
So, I mean, actually, yeah, we'll talk about it spoiler-free, and then we'll see if we need to do a spoiler section too. But at least this initial discussion will be spoiler-free.
Yeah, and then if we do get into spoilers, we'll clearly declare. And because I figured out how to do chapters in the podcast, if you're using a podcast app that supports chapters, it'll have it right there, and you can see where it happens. Cool.
Nice. Okay, so I'll just quickly explain the premise of Big Mouth, which is that it is about a bunch of like adolescent, right on the cusp of adolescent kids. And like one of the creators of the show is Nick Kroll, and then there's like a bunch of other sort of people in that kind of comedy circle. But it's this animated series essentially about these kids who are like first discovering sex, essentially. They're not having sex, but they're just discovering, oh, like this is what it's like to go through puberty, and it's super, 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 super dirty.
Yes, it is really, really dirty and gets dirtier, I would say, over the course of the show.
Yeah.
As I guess they have to like top themselves in earlier episodes or something.
It's a show that like one of those things where, it's animated partly because there's a sort of surrealistic component where like both for some of the male and female characters, there's this giant monster that shows up that is basically the personification of all their like hormones. But also it's animated because I think if you tried to make this show with actual kid actors, you would be thrown in jail.
Yes, you would be. It actually kind of reminds me in that way of Wondershowzen, another terrific show from old times. Did you ever watch that? Oh, you've never seen that?
No, I don't think that so. I may have seen like a little bit at some point, but yeah, I mean, if I saw it, I don't remember anything. So I've effectively seen nothing of it.
You should watch that. I think David Cross was involved in some way. But it's basically the Sesame Street, except like very, very disturbing, like extremely, like if you watch them all in a go, if you try to binge it, you just feel ill. Like you feel ill at ease with the world and like disoriented. It's very, very good though. But this kind of had vibes of that, except there was no pretense that it's like a show for kids or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it isn't, because there are like weird kind of like almost educational digressions where like they're sometimes it does feel like because the adult characters are essentially explaining sex to the kids, sometimes it feels like you're actually in like a sex. So you kind of are like, oh, maybe this is some of this is for kids like who are just figuring this stuff out. But I think actually, no, it's really for adults who just
want
to see dirty jokes about kids.
Yeah. And then go like, oh, I remember that. And then that was horrible. I remember now.
Yeah.
I was a monster too.
And I should say, I mean, when I say, yeah, exactly. And that like, when I say it's dirty, it's not like, it's the point of the show is not to like do like disgusting things with kids. The point of the show is like, actually when you're in, I mean, I think probably for your entire life as a sexual being, but especially in your like, you know, when you're like 12, 13, 14, like, you are like a hormone monster and you like are like figuring, it's like incredibly confusing and like also super gross. And I think in a lot of ways, it's really just trying to capture that feeling of like, holy shit, all these things are happening in my body and I want to have sex with everything. I don't even know what sex is yet, but I want to do it.
Yeah. And I think they do a good job of that. And even, I mean, even if it's stuff that where like I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, I do understand. I get this. Like, this is, I totally understand. I totally sympathize or like remember this now. But I didn't, I like going into it, it's not like I was like, oh, I guess this was what it was like. But I had forgotten. I had put in it maybe a purpose. I had buried it deep, but it was like, yeah, it was fun that way. Yeah. And it's like, it does a good job too, I think, of like, at least, and I can't say this because I'm not a woman, but like, Tara has been enjoying it as well, and she seems to say or like find that it gets the female point of view also good or like accurate anyway.
Yeah, I mean, because Nick Kroll is the most high profile of the creators, but I think there's like four different creators and you know they're women who are among the creators and among the writers as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just say that like also Maya Rudolph, who I think has a couple of different voice roles, but she plays the female hormone monster.
Yeah.
And she is so good.
She's very good. Very, very good.
Like the way she says bubble bath is so good.
Yeah. Like she's clearly having a great time just like really letting loose with the character. And it's super effective. And then, yeah, she does and that's like a few of them do different voices here and there. Right.
Yeah.
Another highlight for me is Fred Armisen. I think he does a great job as the father of one of the characters there.
Right. The sort of like, he's like a, cause he's actually like, I think in a lot of ways a really good dad, but he just also happens to be like kind where he's like so understanding and so open that it's a little creepy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it seems very much like a character he has played on Portlandia, even if I can't put my finger on any particular one, but Yeah, it's I think if anything, so like Maya Rudolph is good as the female hormone monster. I think that the male one is a bit grating in the show, and you kind of feel like, at least I kind of felt like, I wish this was just a plot device they used for like one episode, or maybe just here and there more sparingly, and then got rid of it.
Right.
But I mean, that's my only complaint. And I know why he's there, and I get that he's like, it's a key sort of plot device for what plot there is to have him around. But I found myself being annoyed sometimes when he would come on, and I'd be like, all right, I get your, he's pretty one note too, right? It's like, that's okay. I see what you're going to do, and I understand. Now go away. I don't know how you felt about that.
Yeah, I guess that's true in the sense that I think in some ways the female hormone monster, I mean, it seems sort of dumb to say it, but like she has like a little bit more complexity, that she isn't always just like, hey, you want to go have sex with that. Whereas like literally the joke every time is you want to go fuck that, which, and usually it's a good, you want to go fuck that joke, but it is the same joke every time. So I can understand, or the same kind of joke every time. So I can understand why at a certain point, like, all right, yeah, we get it. We get it.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. He has to ramp up too, right? Like the nature of that character is he has to like go overboard to shock. And they do kind of like, they acknowledge that in the actual show itself, that that they're going over the top. Right. So it makes it a bit better, but yeah, it's fine. It wasn't like a thing where I was super annoyed with it. It was just like some of the stuff didn't hit as well as I thought it would, or as well as they maybe thought it would, because I was sort of tired of him being around.
Yeah. I think the other thing I like is like, so most of the humor revolves around sex and kids, but they also just sometimes will just have like random kind of absurdist humor, like including Duke Ellington's ghost.
Yeah.
Played by Jordan Peele.
That's a bit weird too, though, isn't it? It's like, I get why. I guess this is here. I guess like I have more trouble with the motivation for that than with like the actual character and how he works in the show, because it does bring some pretty good moments into the show over time.
Yeah. There's
especially when he's having a party with other ghosts.
I haven't gotten that. So we should say it. So Daryl has seen almost the entire season. You're still like one half an episode away.
Yeah. I'm 9.5 episodes in.
Right. And I'm 6 episodes in. But like,
again, slacking, Anthony.
Well, you haven't seen the entire thing either. So,
well,
whatever.
Well, that's true. I like everything he was in. At first, I was like, why did they do this? It's obviously non sequitur, and a lot of the stuff in the show is non sequitur, but overall it's not really like a totally non sequitur show, and they do a lot of callbacks and like continuity.
Yeah.
So it's not like Family Guy in that regard, right?
Right.
Even though you might think that it's similar upon first glance. But so that was like, oh what? Okay. But I think they just needed a equivalent for like the hormone monster for the other kid, who is not going through puberty. So that's why he doesn't have that.
Right. Yeah. Although it's also this weird kind of fuzzy thing where clearly the other kid, like any kid who's going through puberty, like sees the hormone monster as well. But like, it's not clear, like they never have like a full conversation with it. It's mostly Andrew, who's one of our two main kids, having a conversation with the hormone monster. And then he'll occasionally sort of make a joke with one of the other kids. It's not like, so it's not really clear if there's like one hormone monster who just interacts with everyone, or like exactly, or like each one has their own hormone monster. I'm not, it's a little fuzzy. I mean, it's fine.
They do kind of all of the above without getting any more detailed about it.
Yeah.
We're still in the spoiler free section.
I will also say one of the, my favorite voice things, I'll save it for spoilers. We'll talk about it in spoilers. I don't think there's that many spoilers to talk about. There's a couple of cast members who I think you can find if you look up the Wikipedia page, but if you're just watching the show, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I have a bunch of stuff that's like just moments that I thought were really good, which I don't know if those count as spoilers, but
probably
just like jokes in the show.
I would say, I mean, the one thing, I don't like as much, I think, is maybe that character, Jake. He's like the third of the boys, but he's, you know, there's sort of two main boys, and then there's this guy who they hang out with who's like a magician.
Played by Mantzoukas, Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah, and I do think like the one thing about the show that sometimes I don't like is it gets kind of just like into this mode where it seems like everyone's just kind of like shouting, and it's not really funny, it's just kind of grating. It's just like everyone's like just like at like full pitch, and you're just like, oh, I feel really tired watching this.
Yeah.
For like a few minutes, and then it gets good again. But like in that, when I think when everyone's sort of like this like full pitch, like, and like Jake is the one who's like the worst at that, and like
yeah, that's sort of his character.
Yeah. And there's this really sort of kind of funny gag at first about him like having sex with a pillow. But like at a certain point, it just gets like really old. And
oh, did you get to the episode where they go long on that?
Yeah, and I hated it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just like, why? Why is this? I mean, I liked that they just like went for it and didn't necessarily. There's no point where they sort of took the air out of that joke. They were just like, we're gonna like follow this all the way. But I just, you know, it just was a kind of funny joke that I didn't love.
Yeah, I agree. I agree on that one. And I agree on his character in general.
Yeah.
He gets a bit more interesting towards the end of the show, but not necessary. Except some of the stuff they do with him is very, very good. But it's like the stuff that is good is probably not enough to justify the rest, which is more annoying.
Yeah.
I think... Do you want to do a summary thing and then do some spoilers?
Yeah, let's
probably
do that.
Don't have that much to go and then spoilers, but yeah, a little bit. So I think I would recommend it. I liked the show and I've been enjoying watching it. And in fact, when I skipped ahead to like try to watch as much of it as I possibly could, Tara was mad at me because she was like, I want to keep watching the show. I didn't pay that much attention though, so I'm going to watch it again. But yeah, it was good, and I hope it gets another season. And that's my review of it. I don't think this is a binge. I think this is a thing that you're better off watching kind of sparsely. Like, not sparsely, but maybe, you know, once weekly or something like that. Like, draw it out. Give yourself some time. Because all at once, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
And I think even in the earlier portion of this podcast, we made some dick jokes or something that... was as a result of my brain being in that space. So it's like, it's a good idea to space it out with this one.
Yeah, and don't watch it at work.
Oh, yeah, that's
don't watch it at work. Don't watch it at school. Those are both bad ideas.
No, yeah, it's not. It is definitely not safe for work. Even if you have a pretty permissive job, it's actually not safe for work, I think. Other thoughts that you have about it?
I would say, I mean, I don't necessarily think it's like a home run show. Like, it's not like a you must go. Whereas, like, I think, like, by the end of the first season, like, BoJack Horseman was like a show that I was just like, oh, this is like fucking amazing. This is more like, oh, this is good. I enjoyed this. And I would say also the other thing is, even though that description I gave at the beginning, I think is true for the whole, at least the six episodes I've seen, is that, like, as the show goes on, they kind of have to start inventing some other plots. So, like, there's one episode where they visit New York, which I really enjoyed, and like other stuff like that. So like, it's not just sex stuff. It sort of becomes other kinds of humor, just because, you know, you've got to tell different kinds of stories. You can't just make the one sex joke over and over again. So if you think it's just going to be about sex, it'll actually be a little bit broader than that too.
Yeah, but that does motivate all their actions pretty much throughout,
yes.
Even in those other episodes.
Yes, that's right. Right. Or they use that as a springboard for a bunch of different stories. It's not like they're all, but it's not just like they're all like standing around thinking about sex all the time. Some episodes are, and those are great too.
Yeah. Cool. So you want to move on to spoilers then?
All right, we are going into spoilers for Big Mouth.
Okay. So, yeah, again, not many spoilers probably because it's like not a super plot-driven show, but it has more plot than you would expect. Like, there's plot, or than I expected. There's plot throughout, and there's, like, through lines, and they actually reference earlier episodes all the time. Like, later, in, they actually say, like, oh, this is a callback to last episode. And here, in one of them, they're like, and this is what's happening in next episode. With Jesse, like, discovering her body or whatever. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very sex-positive episode. Like, they said that right in the episode prior to that episode airing. So it actually does some good fourth wall breaking, and I think not too much, like not to the point where it's annoying. So I like that about it.
Yeah, and the fourth wall breaking is often about the fact that it's a Netflix show.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. I also liked some of my favorite moments. There was an episode in which Nathan Fillion featured as a guest star and also playing himself and a dog version of himself.
Yeah, he was really good. That was really... I mean, it's such a deep cut kind of joke.
Yeah, and they talked about Castle a lot. And I think an actual premise to one of the actual episodes of Castle, which was, it made me very happy. I was very excited to see that, since I am the owner of a Nathan Fillion autograph magazine.
I think we've talked about this. I'm a Nathan Fillion fan from Firefly, but I have not ever seen a single episode of Castle, and I probably never will.
Well, and what's his, you must like the, what do you call it, the musical.
Dr. Horrible. And I saw the episodes he did of Buffy. And I've seen the Much Ado About Nothing that he was in.
So all of that means this was a good cameo.
Good cameo. I would say that the best one that I was, and I didn't figure this out until later, was that there's a scene where Jesse talks to her vagina. And I was like, who is that? That is and I was like, first of all, I was like, this is like, I was like, are they going to show? They're going for it. And it's a really funny scene. Although that's one of the ones where it felt also educational. Cause it was she actually goes through and names all the different parts.
Yes. It felt like it would actually be useful if a teen had been watching this or whatever.
Right.
Or
whatever. Exactly. Yeah. That was Kristen Wiig.
Yeah.
I thought it was amazing. I was like, oh my God.
I think I only put that together because I had just watched The Last Man on Earth, the season premiere.
Oh, okay.
And she's guest starring in it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it would have been hard to tell. But she was really good in that role.
Yeah.
It's only that one episode, I think, but it's a good episode.
I mean, she probably came in and literally worked for 5 minutes, but did a great job.
Yeah, I think that's one of the better episodes, too. It's where they focus more on Jesse. And a lot of the early show is basically just teen boys are gross and they want to do sex on all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And with everything. Which is fine. Point well made. But yeah, it's nice that they then balance it out with some of the other stuff, too.
Yeah. And I would say, as a story, I don't necessarily think it was a great episode, but I was really impressed with the episode where Andrew is wrestling with the question of whether or not he's gay.
Yeah, that was a good episode. Yes.
Because it I think, with TV and especially TV comedy, there's just it's just normal to go to this cliche of gay panic. And it's not that at all, that he's like, oh, I wonder if I am. And I'm obviously worried about it and really confused. But obviously it's, in some specific ways, it would not be great if I found this out about myself. But at the same time, everyone's
just in that it will be difficult, basically.
Yes, exactly. And that my life will become difficult in certain ways. But then everyone else, that there's a lot of jokes and he goes and people make fun of him a lot, but not because of the possibility he might be gay. It's because he's being such a fucking tool about it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was that one was interesting. I kind of thought, I didn't know where they were going to go with it. I thought they were going to settle on that he was, and they didn't, obviously. They went the other way.
Yeah.
I don't know. How did you feel about that? Did you think that was kind of a weird decision for them to do creatively, or what?
I thought it was fine, especially because they didn't, even though they're okay, he's not definitively gay, or at least not in love with his best friend. He also, they end with that talk of everyone's sort of on the spectrum. And so most people aren't completely gay or completely straight. So you might find out
Yeah, that's true. They didn't really definitively be it wasn't dodge that bullet or anything like that. It was
So in that sense, I think it was fine. I mean, I think, then they're from a story perspective, I think they're basically going to sweep it. It seems like they sort of sweep it under the rug and they don't really want to deal with the possibility of him. But they're not really interested in exploring that possibility anymore, or at least as far as I can tell. But I thought that was a nice way to handle it, of being okay, we're going to deal with this, but then actually that's not going to be the focus.
Yeah. And I did think too, I just thought that was a great, I, this is maybe overshare, but I was like, oh yeah, this is totally, I understand this entirely.
Right.
I remember having very similar experiences when I was a kid, going through puberty or whatever. So,
right. And I think that's part of what the episode was about, was just like, especially in that, when you're in that, again, that mode of being like, I think everything turns me on. Then that sort of becomes confusing when you're like, oh, these things, like, sometimes, you know, this turns me on. Like, what does that mean about me?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, it was a good way to do it, where they kind of were like, ultimately, like, it wasn't like, oh, you've settled it and then you're fine. It was like, don't worry so much about that now at this phase in your life. Like, that's not what this is about, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, I don't think that was the funniest or most sort of plot, like, most satisfying from like a plot or character's perspective. But I just thought, like, the fact that they handled it that way, I thought was really well done.
Yeah. And it's not like, I don't think that a lot of the show, I think a lot of the show had that where they were just like expressed an idea well, and not necessarily, it wasn't like the funniest thing in the world or anything like that. Like, and that's maybe what I was expecting going into the show, was more of like a laugh a minute, like joke. And it wasn't really like that. It was like, here's something we want to kind of articulate, and we want to do it in a way that's funny, but we also want to like do it in a way that's thorough and not overly simplified. And they did a lot of that, I think, successfully.
Yeah. I think and they were talking about it. Like, I feel like that, like, it definitely like is making me like the show a little bit more.
Yeah. I don't think this was a real cameo, but the Michael Stipe guest appearance.
Oh, because he's sitting at the song, right?
Yes. Yeah.
that was pretty good. I actually, I thought it was just pretty good, but like that, like I think my roommate had just gotten home and he started watching, and that was like 5 minutes after he'd arrived, and he just like died. Like, he could not stop laughing about it. And I was like, I don't know if it's that funny, but okay, that's pretty good.
I thought it was pretty good because it was a good parody song.
It was pretty good.
He was a personified tampon, which was also very good.
Right. Yeah. Right. And fairly well detailed.
Yes. Yeah. Well detailed enough that you were like, yeah, that's, that's Michael Stipe. That's him.
Yep.
And then he does come back too in a later episode. But you might not have seen that.
That one I have not seen yet.
I don't want to spoil it for you because it's very brief, it's very quick, and it's very funny. It's a funny, funny callback. So I'll leave that for you to enjoy. I think it's next episode.
All right.
Wait, actually, did you see any of the stuff with Garrison Keillor?
No.
Oh. This is just a podcast of me laughing, thinking about past memory. So there's some Garrison Keillor stuff in there too, and it's very funny. Also, it's a funny exchange between, I don't even remember the main character's name. The guy who is going through puberty with the hormone monster, Andrew. So Andrew has like a part where he's trying. There's a portion in the story where he's like trying not to masturbate as much, like at all, actually. And so one of the things he does, which I'm pretty sure we've all probably done, is like try to make the hormone monster go away by like thinking about clearly not sexy stuff. And he starts with his grandmother, and then that doesn't work because the hormone monster makes it sexy, and it's horrible also. But then he moves on to Garrison Keillor. Just his voice and like the sound of his, specifically the sound of him breathing through his nose hairs. And it's good. And then they take it further. And I won't tell you how they take it further because that's part of the best part. But it is a moment where you're like, wow. And they reference it again later in that meta way where they're like, do you think that was too far? It probably was too far, but it's good. It's the example of like the show is doing all that stuff, right, that we were talking about, that's kind of like nice and heartfelt and like explaining these issues and at least talking about them in like a frank and thorough way. But then It also has this part where it does have to rely on the shock humor stuff, and it goes very far by the end of the show to continue being able to shock an audience that has developed, you know, or they imagine has developed resistance to it. I don't know if that's a strength or a weakness. It's funny.
Yeah, it makes you wonder about like what the second season would be like then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and you talked about the Netflix self-reference. That was another moment. They talked about the one the guy actually addresses the viewer directly and is like, "Oh, Netflix audience, like I see you. You at home on the elliptical watching this? I see you." Which is very funny because I literally have an elliptical machine at home and I often watch Netflix while using the elliptical machine. So I thought that was great. Yeah.
I neither have an elliptical machine nor do I. Running is podcasting, is listening to podcast time, man. I don't watch TV.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe when you get to that part in the show, it'll tell you something different.
Oh, yeah. That would be creepy.
Yeah. Hey, you, blogging half-heartedly. No, full-heartedly.
I never post anything without my entire heart in it.
Great. So, it had many small moments that like saved it for me. I don't think it was like a through and through like smash hit. In fact, and you posted the article in Slack to me about like comparing it to
American Vandal,
or at least saying like these are similar and that there's a lot of dick jokes in them.
Right. Well, there's a lot of dick jokes, but actually they're like good and smart shows despite having a lot of, you know, being superficially just dick jokes.
Yeah, exactly. And they do share that in common where there's like hidden depth. But right. I think
we were ahead of the curve on that.
Oh, totally. Totally. I could have written that, but I didn't.
But you
I
didn't.
Was talking to you.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I think I liked American Vandal better overall.
Oh, interesting.
It was consistently better. Just like a little tighter in terms of execution versus this had some more miss moments for me. But it was still something I enjoyed throughout. It just there were parts where I was like, I could have done without that more often.
Interesting. I think I like this better just because it was sort of like goofier and more creative. Whereas I thought American Vandal really stuck to that sort of like one idea of like a mockumentary about these like crime mockumentary about these dumb kids where yeah. like I like both for sure. But I would say that I probably enjoyed, I don't know if I think one is like, because I haven't seen all of Big Mouth. I've now finished American Vandal, but that like, I definitely enjoyed watching Big Mouth more. Like it's just like a more fun show for me. Whereas like American Vandal, like I like it, but also sometimes I'm like, man, I'm like, feeling kind of tired of this.
Yeah, I feel like that might be, that's less a media issue than it is a us issue, in that the difference between the way we like to watch media or whatever.
Right. It may just be like a taste thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, anything else you wanted to talk about in this show from a spoiler perspective?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, cool. Yeah, go watch it. It's good.
Go watch it.
We just want like our whole purpose here with this show is to make sure there are second seasons of things that we enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think you know, maybe not yet, but in within the next month, I think we'll have that power.
Yeah, for sure, within the next month.
Yeah,
we'll be the makers and breakers of all online streaming media. Let's close that off because I'll do another chapter marker here. I know that nobody cares about that, but I care. And then we can just sign off with sort of stuff we're watching or stuff we're looking forward to, or even what we're going to talk about next week, which I honestly don't know, actually, come to think of it. Do you know?
I don't. I mean, I think one thing I'd be interested in maybe doing is the Meyerowitz stories.
Oh, yes. I was going to bring that up as like a thing that I was interested in watching. So I would love to watch that, which is Adam Sandler. Yeah.
Adam Sandler movie. And Ben Stiller, but it's directed by Noah Baumbach, who made, what's it called? Francis Ha and When We're Young. And
Squid and the Whale,
yeah,
too.
And Dustin Hoffman and Emma Thompson are in it, too. I mean, this is... Yeah. It, It's pretty. And apparently, well, okay, some of these are probably like cameos that we don't want to mention here. But yeah, it looks like an amazing cast.
It does. It looks like an amazing cast. It looks like I saw the preview. So I have like a Netflix on the Shield. When you look at Netflix on Android TV, as you're paging through just like your normal interface, if you stay on any of the squares long enough, it'll just play a trailer of that thing. So it's actually a pretty cool interface mechanism. But I was just on that and it played the trailer of that. And I don't think I would have seen it otherwise. But I was like, oh, this looks actually good. Like if you are a regular listener, you probably heard us like shit talking Adam Sandler a whole bunch. Three episodes ago?
Four episodes? Something ago? Like that, yeah. In our episode about Little Evil.
Yeah. But this one, it looks like a real movie.
Which he does, yeah. It's like one of those things where Adam Sandler, I mean, I have not seen a ton of like the sort of Adam Sandler comedies, but my sense is there are a few in the 90s that people love, but there's a sense that, okay, like then he just kind of went into autopilot and just kind of does the same old shit. But then once in a while, like with Punch Drunk Love with Funny People, he'll actually then like make a real movie.
Yeah. And I love both those movies. So I'm excited about this one. And I love Noah Baumbach too. So pumped. Yeah, let's do that. Let's watch that then.
Sweet. All right. I think we're going to have to get a review copy. So Netflix, send us a review copy.
Netflix, we'll be reaching out very soon.
Check your inbox.
Yeah. But otherwise, anything else you're excited about? It's premiere season. Any good shows coming back that you're pumped to watch?
No. Wait, is there? I mean, all my energy was in Star Trek. I'm trying to think what else, like, is there anything else coming back this season? I mean, and then also Blade Runner. So like, yeah, I mean, yeah. That's like, now there's no reason to live.
Well, Riverdale is coming back soon.
I have no interest in seeing the second season of that show. I like it fine, but it's like, it's the same way that like, you know, when I watch like Gossip Girl, I think maybe we talked about this, like, where like when I watched Dawson's Creek back in the day, like, they're like fun, but like, I think they run out of like, even semi-realistic stuff to do fairly quickly. And so they just have to like get crazier and crazier. And so like one season is more than enough for me.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to the well, but I also, my Instagram Explore tab is literally just Riverdale memes now. So I've gone over the deep end. Like, you know how the Explore tab just tells you what kind of person you really are.
And that's, you're a Riverdale person. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. But yeah, and I did watch Last Man on Earth. I like that show. It's back. I'm pumped to see Thor. I have the advanced tickets for that, which is like...
Yeah, I think I have tickets for that too. I think it's for another month.
Yeah.
Getting a little far out there, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. Just talking.
Yeah.
I guess we're done. Cool. Well, yeah, join us next week. We'll hopefully have thoughts on Adam Sandler and Noah Baumbach and everybody else in that cool movie.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.